As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
Yeah, buddy, the sun is rising over Missouri, and it's time once again for a show-me showdown. We got breakfast on the table, a coffee brewing on the stove, and there's a revolution in the air. Be a part of it. Welcome to our Wednesday, May the 27th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local, coming to you Monday through Friday here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oracklebroadcasting.com. Visit my little website, if you will, www.vocallocal.org. It'll answer some of the questions that you might have about what is Become Vocal Local. My name is William Roberts, and I've got good news, hard facts, and workable solutions for you today. We might have to punt on those solutions, but if you can't remember the last time you experienced the pursuit of happiness, then you're definitely in the right place at the right time to become vocal local. We're all scratching our heads wondering what happened to our happiness. This is the home of philosophical radicalism, where freedom is popular and remains the best hope for America. Interactive Talk Radio is the name of the game, and to be a part of today's broadcast, you can sign in. Pick a name and become vocal local in the OracleBroadcasting.com chat room, or pick up the telephone and call throughout the broadcast for those with unlimited long-distance access. Or in the Austin, Texas area, you may call 512-904-8014 to join us live on air and from around America and around the world. You can call in toll-free at 866-841-1065, and of course your calls are welcome. You may also send your ideas for guests, show topics, and news to me via email at host@vocallocal.org. That's host@vocallocal.org. And for those without internet access listening via any of our affiliate stations and micro broadcasters, you too can be a part of it. Send your letters to me at William Roberts, Post Office Box 96, out of Exeter, Missouri, 65647. A big shout out to Liberty Radio in Owensville, Micro 1650 AM Buffalo, 94.3 Elgin, Texas. Thank you, gentlemen, for broadcasting Become Vocal Local. Again, check out our little website, vocallocal.org. The listener call-in number is 866-841-1065, and the Oracle chat room is open, waiting for you. Commodity futures spike in the wake of the consumer price index con job, and gold remains relatively steady. We'll talk about that quickly. The French Revolution, causes, effects, Thomas Paine, theism, unraveling some of the Gordian knots of mysticism and mythology. We're going to go there today. Of course, we'll take your calls and much, much more. Let's go to those market reports for Wednesday, May the 27th, 2009, active trading in New York City as of 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Gold was trading up 50 cents at $952.60. Silver was off 4 cents, trading above $14.50 at $14.57 for one of those beautiful troy ounces of silver. Platinum off $4 today, $1,129. Palladium also lost $4 so far in this morning's trading, now trading at $226 an ounce. The lows and the highs in the gold spot market so far, $945.80 for a low, $954.80 for a high. $9 spread thereabouts. Year-on-year gain so far, $48.30 over 1 year ago today for a 5.34 return on your investment in gold. The London Gold Fix this morning, the gold cartel got in there and ran their flags up at $949.50, and so we should probably see gold stay someplace very close to the money masters in London. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 196 points, trading at 8,473 yesterday. The NASDAQ closed 58 points higher at 1,750. The S&P closed up 23 points yesterday at 910. The USDX, that dollar index, we're going to talk about that in a moment. Many of you don't know what that is. We'll talk about that in a moment. Up 43 points. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you one of the people who think, I have plenty of time, nothing's ever going to happen bad to me? Do you believe that when your cupboards are bare, our corporate-controlled government will jump right in to feed you and yours? Do you have at least a year's supply of food for your family? This is Kurt, the armchair survivalist, heard on this network. Survival Enterprises sells real food, canned for long-term storage. Beef, chicken, turkey, bacon, butter, cheese, eggs, freeze-dried fruits and vegetables, Mountain House freeze-dried meals, MREs, a full nutritional line, the British Birkfeld water filter, and more. If you want to prepare now, go to beforeitstoolate.us. That's beforeitstoolate.us. Or call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. Or you can put your head in the sand and be just another sheeple in the corporate-controlled flock. But remember, those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it.
They say that you could travel the world without leaving your home through the pages of a book. Adventures Unlimited brings you all the adventures that you could imagine when you travel through the pages of their books. Adventures Unlimited carries an eclectic diversity of subjects such as alternative health and science, free energy, ancient history, Native American studies, and much, much more. Get away from the daily grind, unwind, and feed your mind to free your mind. Explore any topic you wish at AdventuresUnlimitedPress.com. They're not only an online bookstore, but have stores located around the world and have been in business for over two decades. Adventures Unlimited Press, your own world of information is only a page away.
PureBulk.com has more than 120 nutritional products, super antioxidants, amino acids, and herbal extracts, including advanced life extension nutrition. Find great products like atomic iodine, oil of oregano, spirulina algae, niacin, performance amino acids, herbal extracts, skincare, and heart health nutrition. PureBulk.com products have no fillers, no additives, no hype, and no fancy retail packaging. Just the highest quality bulk nutrition at wholesale pricing. You can also save 50 to 90% off retail nutritional prices when buying bulk wholesale powders and capsules. Shop securely online at PureBulk.com or call 406-251-3270. That number again, 406-251-3270. Use the coupon code iodine and receive a 1 gram atomic iodine sample with any order. That's a 150-day RDA supply of atomic iodine absolutely free. Find out more online at PureBulk.com.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And we have returned right here on our Wednesday morning, May the 27th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local, and welcome back to our little homeschool classroom here on the Internet. We found and started in the broadcast in the first segment, the gold was trading up about 50 cents at $952.60. If you go up to www.kitco.com and look at the charts, you'll see that they've had to change the XY scale again. It's a very tight scale now. They're looking at about a $2 increment in the vertical, and the of course, the horizontal always remains the same with time being time, that old illusion we've spoken of in the past. But anyway, let's go back and pick it up right where we left off on the U.S. dollar index, up 43 basis points, trading above 80 at 80.51. So it regained a lot of what it lost yesterday so far. Anywho, the crude oil up 46 cents, trading at $62.91, and the spot market is going to close in about 7 hours. Let's go into that basket of currencies, little Timmy's basket. Oh, what a nice basket you have, Timmy. The Canadian dollar trading at $0.90 U.S. It's up a little bit today. The Mexican peso up also just a tiny bit today, trading at 8 cents. The euro off just a fraction, trading at $1.39 U.S. The British pound up a little bit more today, breaking out over the top of that $1.60 mark. The Swiss franc trading at 92 cents U.S. So if you're involved in the basket of currencies, or if you're involved in foreign exchange, if you're in the import-export business, that's your basket of currencies. Let's talk about that in a moment. Before we do get the bond yields for you, the 2-year bond is at 0.96%, the 10 years running 3.53, and the 30 year at 4.46%. What is that U.S. dollar index? I pulled this down just as a summary today. The U.S. dollar index is registered, by the way. It's a trade name. The U.S. dollar index is computed using a trade-weighted geometric average of 6 currencies. Everybody have their pencil ready? The 6 currencies and their trade weights are the euro, weighing in at 57.6% in this basket. The Japanese yen, 13.6% of the basket. The United Kingdom or the British pound at 11.9% in the basket. Also, the Canadian dollar at 9.1%, the Swedish krona, Sweden, 4.2%, and the Swiss franc at 3.6%. So those are some more of the basket of currencies. I covered the Canadian dollar, the Mexican peso, largely because we're looking at this North American community. Throw in the euro because we can't get rid of that. The British pound, we couldn't get the British off of us for, you know, love or money. And we throw in the Swiss franc just for the dispensationalist, anywho, predestinarians or whatever they call that. Anywho, let's go into our study a little bit. Now, before we go to the study, let's get some news out of the way. Got a couple of news articles I have here. One of them, rather interesting, the Shandong province plans vigorous development of the gold industry. This off chinamining.org, People's Daily. The People's Daily, Communist China. Shandong Province, China's leading gold producer over 30 years, recently announced its scheme of adjusting and vigorously developing the gold industry in the next 3 years. In 2011, Shandong's output of gold produced in mines will reach 67 tons, and gold deep processing will reach 200 tons. The Shandong will make the best efforts to increase annual output and deep processing capability respectively by 12%. The gold mining, sluicing, smelting, and refining enterprises in Shandong province have advanced production technologies and equipments, making them the leaders in this industry in China. Shandong's annual output of gold has been the largest in China for over 30 years. In 2008, the output of gold produced in its mines was 47.62 tons, which accounted for 21% of China's total gold output for the year. There's that. And another article that I forgot to print it out before I closed it, so I'm not going to go back and get it. Anywho, let's go on a little bit further. Here's another article. Investors cash in on the Claymore Gold. And it counts in loonies. This is out of the newspaper in, I didn't write the newspaper down, I usually do, newspaper in Canada. Barry Critchley, the Financial Post, it would be the Financial Post Canada, I did add that in there, published on Wednesday, May the 27th, Claymore Investments, now it's not the same as a Claymore mine, but Claymore Investments, Inc. has raised $400 million for its new gold bullion fund, an amount that could swell to $460 million, making it the largest structured product offering and one of the largest initial public offerings in at least 2 years. All right, pay attention, class. The fund, which includes a number of novel features, includes a hedge against the U.S. dollar, capitalizes on seemingly unquenchable thirst for the metal amid growing concern over inflation and the outlook for the greenback. It has an over-allotment option of 15%, which would take the fund to $460 million if it is oversubscribed. And given that the fund sold units, which each unit consisting of a transferable fund unit with plus a warrant, the issue could also double in size if the warrants are exercised within the next 6 months. Of course, if you want to get this article, just type in investors cash in on Claymore Gold and Financial Post. You can see the whole article. But the fund, which cost, again, the fund which cost come on, investors $10 a unit, starts trading tomorrow, that would be tomorrow, and it puts at least $20 million in the pockets of the underwriters, so at least somebody's going to get rich, huh? It's understood that institutions bought more than half the issue. Now, that's important, too, because as we see all of these governments, you know, 7 out of maybe 10 people work for government, it's not just a U.S. phenomenon, but it's almost across the board. But as more of these various and sundry governments have investment funds and things like that, retirement funds and slush funds and the CAFRA and all that nonsense, they got to put their money someplace. And so they may be looking at these. And as we always say, you know, the last people in to the gold market are going to be these big funds, and they're coming now. It has an overallotment now. The fund, which costs investors $10 a unit, starts trading tomorrow, and it's put at least $20 million in the pockets of the underwriters. For Canadian investors, the deal is especially attractive because the fund will hedge substantially all of its U.S. dollar currency value back to the Canadian dollar, providing exposure to gold while reducing the currency risk. Gold is priced in the U.S. dollars. Claymore's deal is notable for another reason. The manager will ensure the fund trades in a narrow range around the net asset value, normally closed-end funds trade at a discount to the NAV. The fund will automatically convert to an exchange-traded fund, ETF, if, after 6 months, units of the fund trade at a discount to the NAV. The conversion will take place at NAV. Claymore has filed a patent on its conversion technology. You guys are getting a little tricky here, a little funny. They're figuring out new tricks. We need to be aware of that. Claymore's deal is another example of the continuing love affair between investors and gold. Earlier this year, Sprott Asset Management lost Sprott Gold Bullion Fund, an open-ended mutual fund that it described as a convenient, low-cost alternative to owning physical gold. Be careful, folks. Be careful. These people are wanting your money, and they're not giving you any gold. We'll be right back.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, "Information is the currency of democracy." Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Documentary film, The Secret Rite, Volume 1. I'm Josh Reed, and for the almost 2 years, I have researched the secretive right-wing group known as the Council for National Policy. This film explores for the first time the hidden hand that controls the religious and military aims of the American right wing, with such topics as Iran-Contra, the John Birch Society, eugenics, the Vatican controllers, Christian Zionists, the Bohemian Grove, the Patriot Movement, and more. More powerful than the Council on Foreign Relations, more secretive than the Bilderberg Group, The Secret Rite Volume 1 goes where no other film has dared to go. Get your copy today at secretrightmovie.com. That's www.secretrightmovie.com. And find out what you haven't been told about the New World Order.
Loan modifications don't work, at least not without some leverage from a forensic audit by mortgage fraud examiners. Have your payments skyrocketed under an adjustable rate mortgage? Have you been laid off or had your hours cut? Are balloon payments coming due? Congress and the White House are pinning their hopes on homeowners renegotiating their mortgages to stop the housing crisis. Trouble is, the banks are saying no 80% of the time. That's where Mortgage Fraud Examiners comes in. They perform forensic loan audits and appraisals to find legal deficits in your mortgage. They estimate that up to 85% of all mortgages have legal problems. Banks and lenders suddenly start cooperating if faced with a lawsuit for violating lending laws or appraisal fraud. You could gain some powerful ammunition to use for mortgage fraud examiners. Get more information at www.mortgagefraudexaminers.com or call 800-540-EXAM. That's 800-540-3926.
And we've returned once again right here. We're talking about this this new system that's coming into play up in Canada. Claymore Gold, Claymore Investments, Inc. has raised $400 million for its new gold bullion fund. Continuing from the article here, the fund can also invest in non-gold assets. Let's see, did I skip something? Yes, I did. I skipped something important. Anyway, let's go back up. I'll go back up a little bit here. The Claymore's deal is notable for another reason. The manager will ensure the funds trade in a narrow range around net asset value. That's NAV, so that's another little definition to add to your vocabulary when we talk about these ETFs and whatnot. Claymore's deal is another example of the continuing love affair between investors and gold. Again, earlier this year, Sprott Asset Management launched Sprott Gold Bullion Fund, an open-ended mutual fund that is described as, quote, a convenient, low-cost alternative to owning physical gold. That's where we left off when we hit the break. And I would caution you, low-cost alternative to owning physical gold. Now, if you're a speculator, you want to play these markets, you want to get involved in there, this gives you an ETF, could give you an opportunity to take advantage of sudden spikes and pullbacks, as they call them, in the gold market. Buyer beware, proceed at your own risk, caveat emptor, all of that. But for anybody that is on the lower end of the bourgeoisie, I strongly recommend that you be very careful here. This is a great way of taking your small fortune and turning it into nothing in a short order. Continuing here, the fund is suitable for those investors who want exposure to the capital appreciation potential of gold. Okay, did you catch that? It's suitable for those investors who want the exposure to the capital appreciation potential of gold and who want to maintain a high level of liquidity of their investments with a low to medium tolerance for risk and volatility. What is all that talking about? Well, again, it means that you can trade on the computer, on the internet, through your broker probably, and you can buy and sell gold as gold goes up and down. If you look at the market today, even though it's trading in a very narrow band, we had a sudden spike earlier before the broadcast, and it started going up. You could have made $5 an ounce, perhaps, for all of your holdings. And if you had 1,000 ounces, you could have made $5,000 in the time it took me to drink one cup of coffee. So, you know, hey, it's out there. It exists. But be careful. These guys can fleece you in a heartbeat. You can lose that kind of money in the same amount of time. Continuing here, dropping down, last month it raised U.S. $210 million via the sale of units at U.S. $10.50 per unit. So you're buying these things at $10.50 a pop. The underwritten price of U.S. $10.50 per Class A share was non-dilutive and accretive for the existing shareholders of the central fund. You better read the prospectus carefully. After the transaction, it owned 1.17 million ounces of gold. Where did they get their 1.17 million ounces of gold? Where did they get it? Do they have it? Do they have it in a custodian, you know, care someplace? They got it in a warehouse someplace? Can you go visit it? Can you tap on the bars and shake the bags of bullion? Over the past 5 years, the fund has outperformed the S&P, the TSX index, by 18.5% per year. Central Gold Trust is the name of it, Central Gold Trust, a closed-end fund that operated by many of the same individuals employing many of the same practices as the Central Fund of Canada. 2 weeks back, it raised $200.2 million via the sale of its units. That's a lot of units, folks. They're going at $10.50 a piece. They raised $200.2 million, a price that was non-dilutive to existing unit holders. All the proceeds were invested in gold bullion. Where did they buy the gold bullion? Where did they buy the gold bullion? Did we see it reflected in the market? Were we watching the market spike or drop as a result of these guys buying in? $202 million, $200.2 million supposedly were invested in gold bullion. After the deal, it owned, listen to that, 398,009, in other words, 398,000 fine ounces of gold bullion and 4,981 ounces in gold certificates. The four Canadian funds pale in comparison with the SPDR Gold Trust, formed in late 2004, the world's largest exchange-traded fund backed by bullion, which owns 1,106 tons of gold, larger than the gold holdings of the Swiss government, ostensibly. So, there you go. More gold news out there. You keep your eyes on it. You know, China's going into full-scale production on gold. Other people are pulling in gold. We've talked about Dubai, the UAE, the Saudis. You know, lots of people are talking gold right now. They don't like what's going on with this phony fiat money, and who could blame them? All right. Let's go back into our talk from yesterday. Pretty well just got interrupted while we were discussing Thomas Paine and the French Revolution. I want to pick it up right here with Thomas Paine today and reading from his book, The Age of Reason. And this is another one of the many books that I have in my library that were published by the Modern Library. The Modern Library. It's a Random House, Inc. publication. These were some very, very interesting books. This one was copyrighted in 1943. It has the Common Sense, the Crisis Papers, the Rights of Man, the Age of Reason, the Letters to Washington, Thomas Paine, and Estimate. These are the contents of this particular volume. But these Modern Library books are treasures in my library. They're nice little hardbounds. They're small. They have two different sizes. This is the larger of the two sizes. And you can find them sometimes at flea markets and garage sales, used bookstores. And there's many, many hundreds of titles that they published. And you'll find just about everything. You'll find just about everything that covers the Enlightenment, all of the Age of Reason, all of the various philosophers. This is really the super social scientist's home library, if you will. This one is one of what they called the modern library giants, and they're large books, larger books than the regulars. But they have Tolstoy, Boswell, Hugo, the complete poems of Keats and Shelley's, Plutarch's Lives, Edward Gibbon, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, Great Voices of the Reformation. That one, by the way, is excellent. 12 famous Restoration plays, Henry James, the most popular novels of Sir Walter Scott, Carlyle, Bulfinch, Cervantes, Nietzsche, Browning, Ibsen, Homer, Abraham, Lincoln, Springsteen, plays, Tolstoy, Charles Lamb, Karl Marx, Charles Darwin, complete works of Lewis Carroll, Prescott Williams, etc. You get the idea. Fabulous, fabulous. And they have very good translations and really good editorship, too. These are quite good books. And you can get them cheap. So, anyway, this is from My Age of Reason, Tom Paine. Later times have laid all the blame upon the Goths and the Vandals. However, unwilling the partisans of the Christian system may be to believe or acknowledge it, it is nevertheless true that the age of ignorance commenced with the Christian system. All right, you want to have that one again? Later times have laid all the blame upon the Goths and the Vandals, but, however unwilling the partisans of the Christian system may be to believe or to acknowledge it, it is nevertheless true that the age of ignorance commenced with the Christian system. There was more knowledge in the world before that period than for many centuries afterwards. And as to religious knowledge, the Christian system, as already said, was only another species of mythology. And the mythology to which it succeeded was a corruption of an ancient system of theism. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
Aerial spraying, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
All right, so we're back once again here going through some of the writings of Thomas Paine from his Age of Reason. You know, this man almost lost his life on more than one occasion for writing with this kind of candor and honesty and integrity. And I value his writings. I know it's upsetting to some people because when you start to mess around with long-held belief systems, it can be quite a challenge, but we listen to everyone, we read everything or anything, and then we believe nothing until we prove it in our own research. And so he had a caustic pen, but there was so much blood on the soil of Europe and other places as a result of the advance of Catholicism that the caustic nature of his pen, I think, was very appropriate and timely. Nevertheless, he had a tremendous amount of courage for this writing, and we're going to find out a little bit more about it. It's owing to this long interregnum of science and to no other cause that we now have to look through a vast chasm of many hundred years to the respectable characters we call the ancients. Had the progression of knowledge gone on proportionally with the stock that existed before, that chasm would have been filled up with characters rising superior in knowledge to each other, and those ancients we now so much admire would have appeared respectively in the background of the scene. But the Christian system laid all waste, And if we take our stand about the beginning of the 16th century, we look back through that long chasm to the times of the ancients as over a vast sandy desert in which not a shrub appears to intercept the vision to the fertile hills beyond. Now I'll pick that up again in a moment. But before we do, I want to drop down to the footnote here because it's a very important footnote when he talks about the corruption of an ancient system of theism. Here's the footnote. It is impossible for us now to know at what time the heathen mythology began, but it is certain from the internal evidence that it carries that it did not begin in the same state or condition in which it ended. All the gods of that mythology, except Saturn, were of modern invention. The supposed reign of Saturn was prior to that which is called the heathen mythology and was so far a species of theism that it admitted the belief of only one god. Saturn is supposed to have abdicated the government in favor of his three sons and one daughter, Jupiter, Pluto, Neptune, and Juno. After this, thousands of other gods and demigods were imaginarily created, and the calendar of gods increased as fast as the calendar of saints, and the calendars of courts have increased ever since. All the corruption that have taken place in theology and in religion have been produced by admitting of what man calls revealed religion. The mythologists pretend to more revealed religion than the Christians do. They had their oracles and their priests, who were supposed to receive and deliver the word of God verbally, on almost all occasions. Since then, all corruptions down from Moloch to modern predestinarianism, and the human sacrifices of the heathens to the Christian sacrifice of the Creator, have been produced by admitting of what is called revealed religion. The most effectual means to prevent all such evils and impositions is not to admit of any other revelations than that which is manifested in the book of creation, and to contemplate the creation as the only true and real work of God that ever did or ever will exist, and that everything else called the Word of God is both fable and imposition. The writings of Thomas Paine. The Age of Reason. Let's take a look at theism. Right out of the Encyclopedia Americana, published in 1951, theism is the doctrine of the existence of a capital G God or capital G gods. Or as Dr. Alan Watt says, may your God or gods go with you. It may take the form either of monotheism or polytheism and is opposing only to atheism, which denies the existence of such divine beings. From its use to express the belief of cultured Christian peoples, the term has been given a more restricted meaning. Thus, theism has been identified with monotheism as implying a belief in one God, and hence is distinguished from all forms of polytheism. Further, theism is distinguished from pantheism on the one hand and deism on the other. Pantheism merges God with the world process and thus practically deifies his personality. Deism emphasizes the personality of God but conceives him as existing apart from the world of his creation. Theism endeavors to rise above both of these extremes and embrace the truth contained in each. On the one hand, it maintains the personality of God and his transcendence of the world. On the other, it insists upon the immanence of God, upon his presence in the world as its controlling and life-giving agency. Thus, the God of theism is at once the author and the preserver of the world. In every age and among every people of history, some form of theism is to be found as the basis of religious observance. This belief is refined and developed with the progress of thought and civilization, and the direction of this development is generally in the lines above mentioned, from polytheism to monotheism, and on to a comprehensive theism. Thus, the traditional polytheism of Greece broke down under the influence of philosophic reflection, but this reflection itself culminated in the theistic philosophy of Aristotle. As the theoretical basis of religion and the ultimate explanation of the universe, theism has always had a prominent place in systematic reflection. In the earlier centuries of the Christian era, it was the topic of supreme importance, and the best effort of theologians and philosophers was given to its discussion and exposition. As a result, certain proofs for the existence of God were formulated, the most important of which we possess considerable historic interest. We may mention three of these arguments. One, the ontological argument. Well, I guess we don't. There's more, and we needn't go there. You get the idea. All right, back again now to Thomas Paine. It is an inconsistency scarcely possible to be credited that anything should exist under the name of a religion that held it to be irreligious to study and contemplate the structure of the universe that God had made. But the fact is too well established to be denied. The event that served more than any other to break this first link in the long chain of despotic ignorance is that known by the name of the Reformation by Luther. From that time, though it does not appear to have made any part of the intention of Luther or of those who were called reformers, the sciences began to revive, and liberality, their natural associate, began to appear. This was the only public good of the Reformation, for with respect to religious good, it may as well have not taken place. The mythology still continued the same, and a multiplicity of national popes grew out of the downfall of the Pope of Christendom. So I like to say, on October 31st of 1517, when the great German theologian and lawyer nailed his 95 thesis to the door of the Wittenberg Church, he essentially crucified Christ afresh and drove a wooden hub right into the heart of Christendom. We transferred over, we stepped across the threshold from the old world order into the new world order. And a transfer happened there that was basically, it made the, instead of the infallibility of the Pope, the Bible became infallible and the people became infallible. And all of this was necessary to bring us into the age of reason and to jumpstart the modern age, if you will, at the close and bringing to a close feudalism, which we've covered a little bit in the past. Now we're up to the point here of the French Revolution, some 250 to 270 years after the Reformation, and we're starting to find that the minds of men started to operate again. And in this process, we talked about the Commercial Revolution, the Intellectual Revolution. We didn't discuss the Renaissance, but that could be included as well. Things were changing. Things were starting to happen. The old mythologies were being questioned, largely because as science was coming on us and at us, so much of the stuff that the theologians preached about just wasn't there. Kind of an amazement that the God of the Bible never bothered to tell anybody about bacteria or any of the other important things we should know. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail and is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website, again, is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
How would you like to finally be debt-free without paying another cent to creditors and not have to file bankruptcy? DebtCrisisSolutions.com can help free you from the debt trap. This is not a debt settlement program which has tax consequences or debt consolidation. With our program, there are no more payments to creditors or collectors. We will help restore your credit history, protect your property, prevent paycheck garnishments, and preserve your bank account. We also provide mortgage modification services which can lower your mortgage payments without refinancing. If you're facing foreclosure or are in the foreclosure process, we can help. Finally, proven debt solutions that work for the people. Become debt-free in 90 days. Doing nothing doesn't make the debt go away. Call Debt Crisis Solutions today and speak to an advisor absolutely free. Call 718-615-0123. That's 718-615-0123. Or visit them online at DebtCrisisSolutions.com. That's DebtCrisisSolutions.com today.
Are you one of the people who think, I have plenty of time, nothing's ever going to happen bad to me? Do you believe that when your cupboards are bare, our corporate-controlled government will jump right in to feed you and yours? Do you have at least a year's supply of food for your family? This is Kurt, the armchair survivalist, heard on this network. Survival Enterprises sells real food, canned for long-term storage. Beef, chicken, turkey, bacon, butter, cheese, eggs, freeze-dried fruits and vegetables, Mountain House freeze-dried meals, MREs, a full nutritional line, the British Birkfeld water filter, and more. If you want to prepare now, go to beforeitstoolate.us. That's beforeitstoolate.us. Or call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. Or you can put your head in the sand and be just another sheeple in the corporate-controlled flock. But remember, those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it.
And we have returned, and we're going to go return now to the World Civilizations by Edward McNall Burns, published back in 1963. Of course, there were many, many prior revisions. This is the sixth edition, and it was published all the way up to the 12th edition, I believe, maybe even more than that. But this is deep off in his section on the French Revolution, and he's talking about the intellectual causes of the French Revolution. Of course, you know, our War for Independence and all this preceded this particular part. But this was a long chain here from the time really of the Reformation forward. There were lots of the humanists coming on board. But again, if we don't study our history, we don't understand that the Saracens, the Moors had much to do with all of this. They brought in the writings of Aristotle and reintroduced them to Western man, who had been basically locked in a box by the Catholic Church for a long time, Catholicism. Stifling. There wasn't complete stifling, but there was a considerable amount of mind-forged manacling going on. Everyone being called heretic or witch. The blood flowed continuously. You either converted your peoples to their religion or you died by the sword. That sort of, you know, inspiring religious belief systems. But anyway, going back in here, the author Edward McNall Burns writes, Mr. Burns writes, every great social upheaval of modern times has developed out of a background of intellectual causes. And he says, before a movement can reach the proportions of an actual revolution, it is necessary that it be supported by a body of ideas, providing not only a program of action, key phrase there, but a glorious vision, another key phrase there, of the new order, key phrase there, that is finally to be achieved. That's a very potent inclusion in his writing, because we can see so much of all of that happening by being brought forward by the globalists today. But at the same time, it's nonetheless true. that every great social upheaval of modern times is developed out of a background of intellectual causes, and unless we be just also-rans, then we're going to need to dig deep in our basket of philosophical radicalism and find a better idea and spread it to the four winds, or we'll just have to deal with the program of action and glorious vision of the New World Order that's being created by others around us. Now, we talked about the father of the liberal theory of the 17th and 18th century. That would be John Locke, and the many disciples and followers on that he developed. And he says that since the state is nothing but the joint power of all the members of society, its authority can be no more than those persons had in a state of nature before they entered into society and gave it up to the community. He developed a theory of limited government, which is used to justify the new system of parliamentary rule that was set up in England as a result of the Glorious Revolution. And we covered much of that. You can go back to the archives and visit with that. And then in France, we find the foremost exponent of the liberal political theory were Voltaire, who lived from 1694 to 1778, and Baron de Montesquieu, 1689 to 1755. Very, very close contemporary age range. Voltaire considered Orthodox Christianity to be the worst of the enemies of mankind, but he reserved plenty of contempt for tyrannical government. During Voltaire's exile in England, he had studied the writings of Locke and had been deeply impressed by their vigorous assertions of individual freedom. Returning to France while still a comparatively young man, he devoted a large part of the remainder of his life to the fight for intellectual, religious, and political liberty. Perhaps you can understand why some of the hosts on this network and others, and so many of our listeners, have become ardent researchers and willing to dedicate much of the remainder of our lives in this fight, this continuing American Revolution, the fight for intellectual, religious, and political liberty. I don't really care for the term liberty, however. It's exceedingly difficult to define liberty without using freedom as an operative phrase. So I just skip the liberty and say freedom. Liberty is kind of like when you're dumped off the ship, you get shore leave. And they tell you where you can go, what you must wear, what you can do, what you can't do, but you're on liberty, all right. But unfortunately, you still have the collar, and you still have the leash. Whereas with freedom, you're just free to go. Am I under arrest? Am I free to go? If you're not under arrest, you're free to go. That way, laissez-faire, laissez-passer, you go on your own way, without interference. So I look more to freedom than liberty. But in continuing here, in common with Locke, he conceived of government as a necessary evil, with powers which ought to be limited to the enforcement of natural rights. He maintained that all men are endowed by nature with equal rights to liberty, property, and the protection of the laws. But Voltaire was no democrat. He was inclined to think of the ideal form of government as either an enlightened monarchy or a republic dominated by the middle class, the bourgeoisie. To the end of his life, he continued to be more than a little afraid of the masses. He was even fearful that his attacks upon organized religion might serve to incite the multitude to deeds of violence. It is related that after he had been robbed by some peasants, he attended church for a season in order to persuade the country bumpkins that he still believed in God. Voltaire. Let's look at Montesquieu here. A more profound and systematic thinker than Voltaire was his older contemporary, older by just a scant year or two, Baron de Montesquieu. Though, like Voltaire, a student of Locke and an ardent admirer of British institutions, Montesquieu was a unique figure among the political philosophers of the 18th century. You see, we're right in the midst of philosophical radicalism here. Montesquieu was a unique figure among the political philosophers of the 18th century. In his celebrated Spirit of Laws, he brought new methods and new conceptions into the theory of the state. Instead of attempting to found a science of government by pure deduction, he followed the Aristotelian method of studying actual political systems as they were supposed to have operated in the past. He tended to ignore the Lockean ideas of natural rights and the contractual origin of the state, and taught that the meaning of the law of nature is to be found in the facts of history. The laws of nature and nature's God. That higher law, that overarching law that transcends all of the inventions, if you will, and conventions of man. They just exist. If there is a creator, the creator operates under the same laws of nature. Continuing, moreover, he denied that there is any one perfect form of government suitable for all peoples under all conditions. He maintained, on the contrary, that political institutions, in order to be successful, must harmonize with the physical conditions and the level of social advancement of the nations that they are intended to serve. And I concur with that considerably. How can we have a one-world superstate when there are peoples on this earth of such disparaging backgrounds and abilities that no one size will fit all governments on the planet? And all the peoples. Ludicrous. And to do such would be to either cramp the advanced or overestimate or over-accelerate those that are still developing. Completely out of sync with nature. It's ridiculous. It's foolhardy. But yet, that's supposed to be the product of the great think tanks. For his own country, France, he was disposed to think that a limited monarchy would be the most appropriate form, since he regarded the nation as too large to be made into a republic unless on some kind of federal plan. Okay? Remember what Thomas Paine said about our country. We're not provincial, but we're continental. And a republic on a federal plan was deemed the best idea. Montesquieu is especially famous for his theory of the separation of powers. He avowed that it is a natural tendency. Well, we're at the end of the top of the first hour and going into the second hour. We'll pick it up on the other side with Montesquieu. We'll be back in a couple of moments. Stay with us.
They say that you could travel the world without leaving your home through the pages of a book. Adventures Unlimited brings you all the adventures that you could imagine when you travel through the pages of their books. Adventures Unlimited carries an eclectic diversity of subjects such as alternative health and science, free energy, ancient history, Native American studies, and much, much more. Get away from the daily grind, unwind, and feed your mind to free your mind. Explore any topic you wish at AdventuresUnlimitedPress.com. They're not only an online bookstore, but have stores located around the world and have been in business for over two decades. Adventures Unlimited Press, your own world of information is only a page away.
PureBulk.com has more than 120 nutritional products, super antioxidants, amino acids, and herbal extracts, including advanced life extension nutrition. Find great products like atomic iodine, oil of oregano, spirulina algae, niacin, performance amino acids, herbal extracts, skincare, and heart health nutrition. PureBulk.com products have no fillers, no additives, no hype, and no fancy retail packaging. Just the highest quality bulk nutrition at wholesale pricing. You can also save 50 to 90% off retail nutritional prices when buying bulk wholesale powders and capsules. Shop securely online at purebulk.com or call 406-251-3270. That number again, 406-251-3270. Use the coupon code iodine and receive a 1 gram atomic iodine sample with any order. That's a 150-day RDA supply of atomic iodine absolutely free. Find out more online at purebulk.com.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local. Blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
And welcome back to our Wednesday, May the 27th, 2009, two-hour broadcast to Become Vocal Local. We come to you Monday through Friday right here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com, as we begin our second hour. My name is William Roberts. In the first hour, we talked a little about market reports and the ETFs and the Claymore Gold and the developments in gold mining in China. Then we dive back into our philosophically radical discussion of the French Revolution, the roll-up to that, the causes, the intellectual causes behind that. We went into Thomas Paine, got involved a little bit here with John Locke, brought in Voltaire, and now we're talking about Montesquieu, and we'll just kind of keep it rolling right on through the broadcast. So many of these various and sundries that we find ourselves in today are demanding from us, are calling forth from us the same kinds of thinking abilities and mental skills that these people had in their day. They were on the threshold of a new world order as we are as well. A new world order, perhaps. And we've got real problems here in that we have been somehow or another dumbed down to the point where many people are walking around like they've just simply had chemical lobotomies. We don't have the great number of intellects that we had and that they had in these days that we're talking about, 1789 to 1799. But we certainly have some that can still think, and we need every one of them on board. Let's go on a little bit further here. Again, Montesquieu was especially famous for his theory of the separation of powers. Now, we went through that a little bit. We'll go back and visit with that again in the future. The history of representative government in Europe, written by François Guizot, and one of the three great planks of a representative system of government. In order for them to be successful, there must be a clearly defined and specified separation of powers. There also is essential that they have the vote, election. And third, there also must be publicity, which is not to be confused with media propaganda, but properly publicity. But Montesquieu here is especially famous for his theory of the separation of powers, his theory. He avowed that it is a natural tendency of man to abuse any extent of power entrusted to him. We can think of that of Lord Acton, where he says that power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Absolutism and absolutism as an expression of the monarchs we've talked about here, but it gives you a better understanding of what Acton was talking about, where power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Continuing, again, he avowed that it is a natural tendency of man to abuse any extent of power entrusted to him. And we see that all around ourselves today. And that consequently, every government, regardless of its form, is liable to degenerate into despotism. To prevent such a result, he argued that the authority of government should be broken up into its three natural divisions of legislative, executive, and judicial, in case you wondered where it came from. You just found it. Whenever any two or more of these are allowed to remain united in the same hands, liberty, he declared, is at an end. And isn't it funny? Not so funny, but isn't it funny that Barry the Usurper has just violated all of the ideas about racism and sexism, and has, on the basis of race and sex, appointed his first Supreme Court justice for life. Curious, isn't it? What happened to the separation of powers there? We'll be back. Stay with us.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, "Information is the currency of democracy." Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monkey is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Now on DVD, my newest documentary film, The Secret Rite, Volume 1. I'm Josh Reeves, and for the almost 2 years, I have researched the secretive right-wing group known as the Council for National Policy. This film explores for the first time the hidden hand that controls the religious and military aims of the American right wing, with such topics as Iran-Contra, the John Birch Society, eugenics, the Vatican controllers, Christian Zionists, the Bohemian Grove, the Patriot Movement, and more. More powerful than the Council on Foreign Relations, more secretive than the Bilderberg Group, The Secret Rite Volume 1 goes where no other film has dared to go. Get your copy today at secretrightmovie.com. That's www.secretrightmovie.com. And find out what you haven't been told about the New World Order.
Loan modifications don't work. At least not without some leverage from a forensic audit by mortgage fraud examiners. Have your payments skyrocketed under an adjustable rate mortgage? Have you been laid off or had your hours cut? Are balloon payments coming due? Congress and the White House are pinning their hopes on homeowners renegotiating their mortgages to stop the housing crisis. Trouble is, the banks are saying no 80% of the time. That's where Mortgage Fraud Examiners comes in. They perform forensic loan audits and appraisals to find legal deficits in your mortgage. They estimate that up to 85% of all mortgages have legal problems. Banks and lenders suddenly start cooperating if faced with a lawsuit for violating lending laws or appraisal fraud. You could gain some powerful ammunition to use for mortgage fraud examiners. Get more information at www.mortgagefraudexaminers.com or call 800-540-EXAM. That's 800-540-3926.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And we've returned once again right here on Become Vocal Local. Thank you, Jeff Thomas. And we are entering our second hour on Wednesday, May the 27th, 2009, if you're just tuning in. Continuing our study of philosophical radicalism here at the time of the French Revolution, going into some ideas advanced by Montesquieu. This favorite scheme of Montesquieu here from our text, World Civilizations by Edward McNall Burns. This favorite scheme of Montesquieu was not intended, of course, to facilitate democracy. And what was this favorite scheme? He said, whenever two or more of these would be the legislative, the executive, and the judicial, whenever any two or more of these are allowed to remain united in the same hands, liberty, he declared, is at an end. And the only effective way to avoid tyranny is to enable each branch of the government to act as a check upon the other two. So not only was he basically reliable or responsible for, it was his theory of the separation of powers, but he visioned it as a check and balance system. For example, the executive should have the power, by means of the veto, to curb the encroachments of the lawmaking branch. The legislature, in turn, should have the authority of impeachment in order to restrain the executive. And finally, there should be an independent judiciary vested with power to protect individual rights against arbitrary acts of either the legislature or the executive. And this favorite scheme of Montesquieu was not intended, of course, to facilitate democracy. In fact, its purpose was largely the opposite, to prevent the absolute supremacy of the majority, expressed as it normally would be through the people's representatives in legislature. It was a typical illustration of that strong dislike which the bourgeoisie, that would be the middle class, rising capitalist middle class, had come to have for despotic governments in any form, whether of the few or of the many. Montesquieu's principle of the separation of powers was nonetheless influential. It was incorporated in the first of the governments set up during the French Revolution, and it found its way with very few changes indeed into the Constitution of the United States. The second of the great political ideals which occupied an important place in the intellectual background of the French Revolution was the ideal of democracy. Now listen carefully. Probably not the same democracy you're thinking of. In contrast with liberalism, democracy was and still is much less concerned with the defense of individual rights than with the enforcement of popular rule. As a matter of fact, in its original historic meaning, democracy is inseparable from the idea of the sovereignty of the masses. What the majority of the citizens will is the supreme law of the land, for the voice of the people is the voice of God, vox populi. I think it's vox di, vox die. Vox populi, vox die. That's it, in Latin. It is generally assumed that under democracy, the minority will continue to enjoy full liberty of expression. But this assumption does not necessarily hold. The only sovereign right of the minority is the right to become the majority. As long as a particular group remains a minority, its members cannot claim any rights of individual action beyond the control of the state. Many exponents of democracy in the present generation, this would be the 60s, would deny there that this statement is true and would stoutly maintain their devotion to freedom of speech and freedom of the press as rights which the government cannot legally infringe. But this attitude springs from the fact that the current ideal is generally combined with liberalism. Indeed, democracy and liberalism have now come to be used as if they were identical in meaning, which originally they were not. Continuing here, he says, originally, however, they were separate ideals. Historic democracy also included a belief in the natural equality of all men, opposition to hereditary privilege, and an abiding faith in the wisdom and virtue of the masses. The founder of democracy, as described above, was Jean-Jacques Rousseau. He lived from 1712 to 1778. Since Rousseau was also the father of Romanticism, another one of these isms, and now we have the founder, we can expect that sentiment should have deeply colored his political judgments. Consistency, moreover, was not always a crowning virtue of his reasoning. Flip-flopper. The most significant of his writings on political theory were his Social Contract and his Discourse on the Origin of Inequality. In both of these, he upheld the popular thesis that men had originally lived in a state of nature. He's certainly not the first there. But, in contrast with Locke, or perhaps Hobbes, he regarded this state of nature as a veritable paradise. No one suffered inconvenience from maintaining his own rights against others. Indeed, there were very few chances of conflict of any sort. For private property did not exist for a long time, and every man was the equal of his neighbor. I don't know what kind of a pipe he was sucking on, but his knowledge of history was pretty deficient, in my opinion. Eventually, however, evils arose due primarily to the fact that some men staked off plots of land and said to themselves, "This is mine." So we're confusing property in land with property in general, and that's a minefield to wander into. It was in such manner that various degrees of inequality developed, and as a consequence, cheating, trickery, insolent pomp, insatiable ambition soon came to dominate the relations among men. It might be questioned whether any of these things didn't go back to the very beginning. You can certainly look at the animal kingdom, if you will. I don't imagine that man has infected their brains. Try and tell a pride of lions that this wildebeest isn't theirs after they've chased it down, run it down, killed it. And then the hierarchy inside of the group, and find all of the examples of continuing government and continuing social structure throughout all of the animal and the insects and the birds and the bees, and the whole creation speaks of a clockwork. Anyway, the only hope of security was now for men to establish a civil society and to surrender all of their rights to the community. This they did by means of a social contract to which each individual agreed with the whole body of individuals to submit to the will of the majority. In my opinion, there's a whole gob and a bunch of poison in the writing of Rousseau. Rousseau developed an altogether different conception of sovereignty from that of the liberals, whereas, well, we'll have to pick it up on the other side with Locke and his followers. Be right back. Stay with us. More to come.
Aerial spray, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
All right, we're back. My smoke lit up here. Back into this Rousseau here, Jean-Jacques Rousseau. Interesting fellow. Can't say that I really agree with him on so much, but he wrote pretty well. Worthy of reading it. Get an understanding of the influence that he did have. Well, let's go into this again further. You know, he's got this idea where you can just basically everyone takes all of their rights and you throw all of the rights into a big hat. And then you only take out the rights that you're willing to give to others. Things like that. It's the submission to the will of the majority. It's the old two wolves and a sheep, you know, voting on what's going to be for supper and who's going to pick up the tab. And I don't agree with that kind of an idea at all. The right of the minority is completely overlooked in this process. And I think our founders had a better way of laying it out than he did. Nevertheless, he is influential and is part of this, the development of the intellectual revolution that was part of the cause of the French Revolution. Continuing here, Rousseau contended that sovereignty is indivisible. And that's kind of an interesting and incredible twist, is that all of sovereignty is one. And it's not divisible. It's indivisible, and it would be then also inalienable if it's indivisible, perhaps. He contended that sovereignty is indivisible, and all of it became vested in the community when civil society was formed, and so then you can think of the idea of the sovereign state. Our union, a union of sovereign states and sovereign nations. But if sovereignty is not divisible, then the federal system would have all of the sovereignty, but then the global system would have all of the sovereignty. If sovereignty is not divisible, there would be really either all sovereign or no sovereign. Kind of a place to go in the mind. He insisted further that each individual, in becoming a party to the social contract, gave up all of his rights to the people collectively and agreed to submit absolutely to the general will. I think for many people listening in the audience today, we would disagree with that concept. Let me step over to the gun cabinet. It follows that the sovereign power of the state is subject to no limitations whatever. The general will expressed through the vote of the majority is the court of final appeal. Well, the people have spoken. When only a fraction of the people have voted, the people have spoken. Heard that one until I'm just about ready to barf. The state, which in actual practice means the majority, is legally omnipotent. I don't like these ideas as they develop further here, but this does not really imply, according to Rousseau, that the liberty of the individual is entirely destroyed. On the contrary, subjection to the state has the effect of enhancing genuine liberty. Individuals, in surrendering their rights to the community, merely exchange the animal liberty of the state of nature for the true freedom of reasoning creatures in obedience to law. I think he's been drinking the Kool-Aid. Compelling an individual to abide by the general will is therefore merely forcing him to be free. Forcing him to be free. It must be understood also that when Rousseau referred to the state, he did not mean the government. He regarded the state as the politically organized community, which has the sovereign function of expressing the general will. The authority of the state cannot be represented, but must be expressed directly through the enactment of fundamental laws by the people themselves. The government, on the other hand, is simply the executive agent of the state. Much to think about in all of this. Its function is not to formulate the general will, but merely to carry it out. Moreover, the community can set the government up or pull it down whenever it likes. The influence of Rousseau's political theory would be hard to exaggerate. His dogmas of equality and the supremacy of the majority were the chief inspiration for the second stage of the French Revolution. Doctrinaire radicals like Robespierre were among his most fervent disciples. But Rousseau's influence was not confined to his own country. Some of his theories made their way to America and found an echo in the certain principles of Jacksonian democracy. Although, of course, it is extremely improbable that many of Jackson's followers had ever scarce heard of Rousseau. So even though we can see similarities or similitudes, it's hard to say that they are Rousseau in origin. I think it may very well have been almost a synergy of thinking of some sort. A synergistic mind of man, an expression of the spirit or the soul or the energy of people acting as human transmitter receivers, mental mind meld. However you want to go into all that, I'll leave that to others. On this network, we've got plenty that can express it better than I. Continuing here, from Rousseau's doctrines that the state is legally omnipotent and that true liberty consists in submission to the general will, it was not a very difficult step to exalting the state as an object of worship and reducing the individual to a mere cog in the political machine. Hail Bush. And hail no. Even though Rousseau suggested that the majority would be limited by moral restraints and insisted upon the rights of the people to pull down their government, these limitations were not enough to counteract the effect of his stress upon absolute sovereignty. And so we can see in some of this the creeping in of this virulent nationalism. Makes you, you know, just lie awake at night thinking of the jackboots marching down the street, going house to house and door to door at 5 o'clock in the morning or something. Not really interested in seeing the exaltation of the state as an object of worship, reducing the individual to a mere cog in the political machine. It's a little bit extreme for me, even though I do consider myself to be a bit of a philosophical radical. It's a little too radical for me, Bubba. Goose-stepping isn't my idea of a good life. In the second half of the 18th century, a number of brilliant writers began attacking the traditional assumptions in regard to public control over the production and trade, and their special target of criticism was mercantilist policy, which we've discussed a bit here. The end of the guilds and the rise of capitalism, the commercial revolution we've spoken of in the past. To a large extent, the new economics was founded upon the basic concepts of the Enlightenment, particularly the idea of a mechanistic universe governed by inflexible laws. The notion now came to prevail that the sphere of the production and distribution of wealth was subject to laws just as irresistible as those of physics and astronomy. So once again, we can see that in the rise of statism and in this process of the Enlightenment and the Renaissance and all of that, as we come out from underneath this heavy, wet, dank army wool blanket of Catholicism, this blanket that had laid over most of Western and Eastern Europe for centuries, as the people began to think and some of the old notions started to fall by the boards. There were many different expressions of freedom. You know, it's like all of the various incendiary groups out there. You've got your End the Fed bunch, you know, that figured that that's going to be the deal, and the Retake Congress bunch that figured that's going to be the deal. Well, there's lots of deals. What we don't need now is New Deal. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Broadcasting Network.
Long live the revolution.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail, and it's a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products, including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
How would you like to finally be debt-free without paying another cent to creditors and not have to file bankruptcy? DebtCrisisSolutions.com can help free you from the debt trap. This is not a debt settlement program which has tax consequences or debt consolidation. With our program, there are no more payments to creditors or collectors. We will help restore your credit history, protect your property, prevent paycheck garnishments, and preserve your bank account. We also provide mortgage modification services which can lower your mortgage payments without refinancing. If you're facing foreclosure or are in the foreclosure process, we can help. Finally, proven debt solutions that work for the people. Become debt-free in 90 days. Doing nothing doesn't make the debt go away. Call Debt Crisis Solutions today and speak to an advisor absolutely free. Call 718-615-0123. That's 718-615-0123. Or visit them online at DebtCrisisSolutions.com. That's DebtCrisisSolutions.com today.
Are you one of the people who think, I have plenty of time, nothing's ever going to happen bad to me? Do you believe that when your cupboards are bare, our corporate-controlled government will jump right in to feed you and yours? Do you have at least a year's supply of food for your family? This is Kurt, the armchair survivalist, heard on this network. Survival Enterprises sells real food, canned for long-term storage. Beef, chicken, turkey, bacon, butter, cheese, eggs, freeze-dried fruits and vegetables, Mountain House freeze-dried meals, MREs, a full nutritional line, the British Birkfeld water filter, and more. If you want to prepare now, go to beforeitstoolate.us. That's beforeitstoolate.us. Or call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. Or you can put your head in the sand and be just another sheeple in the corporate-controlled flock. But remember, those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
All right, so we're back once again, kicking our way through some of this philosophical radicalism from Rousseau to others. Coming down through this idea, the influence of the new economic theories that started to develop as well. We've got the intellectual causes of the revolution, the French Revolution. We're going to have the economic causes as well. Let's go into that a little bit. Basically, as a final intellectual cause of the French Revolution, the influence of the new economic theory must be given at least passing attention. In the second half of the 18th century, a number of brilliant writers began attacking the traditional assumptions in regard to public control over production and trade. Their special target of criticism was mercantilist policy. To a large extent, the new economics was founded upon the basic conceptions of the Enlightenment. particularly the idea of a mechanistic universe governed by inflexible laws. We covered that. This idea of the mercantilist policy, we recall the bourgeoisie, this capitalist middle class rising up. They erected their states, if you will, their absolute monarchs, with an eye towards protecting their interests, not only nationally in their own state, etatis, their own status, their own estates, but they are also looking at guarantees globally. Some people look at what's going down right now with this public-private partnership globally, and I think rightly infer overtones of the former mercantilist policies and trade and the rise of these absolutists, these absolute monarchs. Vomitous as it might sound, Barry the Usurper being the most powerful mulatto in the world, how does that work out? Don't think so. But the notion now came to prevail that the sphere of the production and distribution of wealth was subject to laws just as irresistible as those of physics and astronomy. See, as these mind-forged manacles came off the people, and they started to realize things like, you know, hey, this planet rotates. And why, we revolve around the sun. And Jerusalem isn't the center of the universe. In fact, it's just a box of rocks on the west shore of the Dead Sea, and it's of little or no importance. And the Hebrews are chosen only by themselves, and their writings are nothing more than mythistoremia. Anyone that gives them more credit than that needs to learn how to read. Or at least that was kind of the sentiment of many of them. The new economic theory may also be regarded as the counterpoint or counterpart of political liberalism. But these new economic theories started to come up as well, because as they started to invent new things and make progress on in medical areas and in agriculture and food production and whatnot, the population started to swell. And the idea of having more cotton garments than you can get rid of, you know, you got this big box and it's all full of socks and you made them so fast you can't believe you got them all made so fast. Never before were you able to make so many socks in such a hurry that it started to look kind of handy to maybe have a colony of people that were walking barefoot that could use your socks, and they would be a captive audience, a captive buying market, or maybe they could just be a nation of consumers. The cardinal aims of the two were quite similar: to reduce the powers of government to the lowest minimum consistent with safety, and to preserve for the individual the largest possible measure of freedom in the pursuit of his own devices. Now we're going to start getting involved with the physiocrats. Now we're going to start having some economists coming on the scene here. Let's find out a little bit about the doctrines of the physiocrats. The first of the leading champions of a revised attitude toward economic problems were members of a group known as the physiocrats. The most eminent among them were François Quesnay, the author of the Tableau Economique, the Bible of Physiocracy; Dupont de Nemours, the ancestor of the Dupont family in the United States; and Robert Jacques Turgot, the finance minister for a brief period under Louis XVI. From the outset, these physiocrats condemned mercantilist doctrine. One of their chief aims was to prove that the natural enterprises of agriculture, mining, and fishing are more important to national prosperity than commerce. Nature, they held, is the real producer of wealth, and therefore those industries which actually exploit the resources of nature and make them yield things of value to man are most to be prized. Trade is essentially sterile, since it merely transfers goods already in existence from one person to another. Following this? the doctrines of the physiocrats. As time went on, these doctrines were subordinated to another idea, which the physiocrats came to regard as paramount to everything else. This was the liberation of economic activity from the suffocating restraints imposed by the state. The physiocrats, and remember these suffocating restraints imposed by the states, were the result of the appeals and the works of these early mercantilists, the guilds as they transferred over, and the new capitalists that came involved in all of this process. All of the breaking down of the mystery religions, the Masons, you know, the Carpenters, the Smiths, the Schumachers, and the rest of them. This was the liberation of economic activity from the suffocating restraints imposed by the state. These restraints were against competition of their companies and their corporations. The physiocrats demanded that the government should refrain from all interference with business, except insofar as might be necessary for the protection of life and property. Get the Environmental Protection Agency off my butt, to use a more modern phrase. Nothing should ever be done to hinder the operation of natural economic laws. This doctrine was neatly summed up in the picturesque maxim. Now, I cannot, and I have not studied out every single bit of this yet, so if I blow it in French, bear with me. But it goes along this line, and you've heard only parts of it before. I've never seen it as completely stated as it is here. Laissez-faire et laissez-passer. Le monde va dire le même. And of course, our French and Canadian listeners are cackling and laughing at my insanity here. But in English, translated, it is let do and let alone. The world goes on of itself. Laissez faire and laissez passer. Let it be and let me pass. It's another way of saying it. The ideal of laissez-faire soon came to embody such notions as the sanctity of private property and the rights of freedom of contract and free competition. It was thus the very antithesis of the restrictive policies of mercantilism. The greatest of all the economists of the Age of Enlightenment and one of the most brilliant of all time was Adam Smith, and if you've never sat down to read his Wealth of Nations, I strongly recommend it. It's a long read, but it's a great history read too. You can understand more about economy reading Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations than many others. But you'll also see the jump-off point for so much of modern economics, and even the champions like Ron Paul, etc., can find a lot of their ground in Adam Smith's writings. Adam Smith, a native of Scotland, began his career as a lecturer on English literature, of all things, at the University of Edinburgh, Scotland, of course, Scotland. From this, he was soon advanced to a professorship of logic at Glasgow College. A logician, a professor in logic. He first won fame in 1759 with the publication of his Theory of Moral Sentiments. And again, when we talk about the pursuit of happiness and the happiness principle, he figures in this as well. Because while he was at the University of Edinburgh, Scotland, he probably, and I haven't nailed it down and couldn't give you specific dates, but he very likely was either contemporary with or associated with or a adherent of Francis Hutcheson, who basically is the guy that we get the happiness principle from. Although there's many, many other aspects of it at other times. Anyway, we'll be back on the other side of this break. We'll continue with Adam Smith and the Wealth of Nations, the physiocrats, their doctrine, and their lives.
They say that you could travel the world without leaving your home through the pages of a book. Adventures Unlimited brings you all the adventures that you could imagine when you travel through the pages of their books. Adventures Unlimited carries an eclectic diversity of subjects such as alternative health and science, free energy, ancient history, Native American studies, and much, much more. Get away from the daily grind, unwind, and feed your mind to free your mind. Explore any topic you wish at AdventuresUnlimitedPress.com. They're not only an online bookstore, but have stores located around the world and have been in business for over 2 decades. Adventures Unlimited Press, your own world of information is only a page away.
PureBulk.com has more than 120 nutritional products, super antioxidants, amino acids, and herbal extracts, including advanced life extension nutrition. Find great products like atomic iodine, oil of oregano, spirulina algae, niacin, performance amino acids, herbal extracts, skincare, and heart health nutrition. PureBulk.com products have no fillers, no additives, no hype, and no fancy retail packaging. Just the highest quality bulk nutrition at wholesale pricing. You can also save 50 to 90% off retail nutritional prices when buying bulk wholesale powders and capsules. Shop securely online at purebulk.com or call 406-251-3270. That number again, 406-251-3270. Use the coupon code iodine and receive a 1 gram atomic iodine sample with any order. That's a 150-day RDA supply of atomic iodine absolutely free. Find out more online at purebulk.com.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, information is the currency of democracy. Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance that helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
And we're back once again, finishing up on this little segment here. We're talking about the creation, actually, all of the causes that led up to the French Revolution, and before we go into the destruction of the old regime, and really say we're getting into the nuts and bolts of all of this. You know, so much of our past is shaped by the people that lived then, and the various and sundry things that were happening at their time, and someday, perhaps in the future, folks will be looking back at this time period in American history and, you know, remarking with, about the things that were going on now. You know, it's more than just a history lesson for me. I'm trying to find answers to questions, deep questions, real big problem questions, problems that we're carrying along so much baggage with us, baggage that we carried over from England, baggage that we carried over from Germany, baggage that was generated out of the rise of the Catholic Church, baggage that came out of the Oriental despotisms of the East. Got all this baggage that we're dragging along with us. And yet we're about to jump into a new century here, this 21st century. A century where technology and all the stuff of life has the potential of just going over the top, coming off the charts, the hinges coming off the door. And are we, even though I have no problem with technology, but are we even mentally or physically, or to use the word spiritually, prepared to deal with this kind of technological change? This advancement. It's like the going into the Industrial Revolution. You know, are we ready to start running McCormick's Reaper out there and into the grain fields? Are we ready for this technology? Are we ready for Fulton steam engines? You know, are we ready for this? You know, what do we need to have to do this with style and grace and not just with another endless sea of blood? But anyway, back to Adam Smith, professor of logic at Glasgow College, theory of moral sentiments, the happiness principle coming on us and at us there. Although he had been interested for some time in problems of political economy, this interest was effectively stimulated by 2 years of residence in France while serving as a tutor for the young Duke of Buccleuch, or something like that. Need to look that one up and study it. Here he became acquainted with the leading members of the physiocratic school and was delighted to find that some of their theories agreed with his own. The influence. Like I said, it was almost, you know, synergistic in origin. So many people that were having the similar thoughts at the same time. You know, with the internet, we can speak all around the world with many people, different places right now, in the chat room, Australia and England, and all over the United States and Canada in the chat room right now, 21 people there. And plenty of room for you folks, all day long. The chat room's a great part of this interactive talk radio. But anyway, back to Adam Smith. He described the economics of Quesnay, with all its imperfections, as the nearest approximation to truth that has been published on the principles of that science. A logician, a teacher of literature, a man that's well-read, and a thinker, and versed in economics. And he comes across the writings of this man, Quesnay, François Quesnay, 1694 to 1774. He writes that with all of its imperfections, as the nearest approximation to truth that has yet been published on the principles of that science, economics. But Smith never enlisted under the standard of the physiocrats. In other words, he didn't join their group. Despite the undoubted influence of many of their doctrines upon him, in 1776 he publishes Inquiry into the Nature and the Causes of the Wealth of Nations. I would consider it to be just as important a book to read as a Karl Marx, Capitalism. If for no other reason, just to grab their historical writings in all of that, really gives you a window into the time period. His book is generally considered the most influential treatise on economics ever written. In this work, he maintained that labor rather than agriculture or the bounty of nature is the real source of wealth. You see, so it's not the natural resources. It's not the Icelandic cod all around Iceland. It's not the old growth cedar that are out there in Washington in the forest. It's not the gold in the ground. It's not the iron. It's the labor that is the real source. Well, Locke said, when a man applies himself, puts his hands on something, makes some natural thing a part of him, that is property. It's not necessarily, you know, a piece of land with four boundary corners marked out on it. That's property as well. But our property begins with us, your physical body, your mind. And then all property flows out from that. It's what our labor, what we put our mind to. It's our intellectual property. It's our physical property, the things we touch with our hands. And these things transcend the laws of nations and precede all of the laws of man. And I doubt sincerely that the first person that ever found a rock that just happened to fit his hand well so that he could break open a coconut with it or bash the brain out of some beast considered it as community property. He probably put it in his little tote and kept that handy rock with him and considered it his own rock. That's his rock. Leave it alone. He don't like it when people touch that rock. There's blood all over that rock. Don't touch it lest your blood be on that rock too, son. Continuing here and closing it out, while in general, Adam Smith accepted the principle of laissez-faire, avowing that the prosperity of all can best be promoted by allowing each individual to pursue his own interest, he nevertheless recognized that certain forms of governmental interference would be desirable. The state should intervene for the prevention of injustice and oppression, for the advancement of education and the protection of public health, and for the maintenance of necessary enterprises which would never be established by private capital. Notwithstanding these rather broad limitations upon the principle of laissez-faire, Smith's Wealth of Nations was adopted as the Holy Writ. And here our author, capital H, capital W, Holy Writ, by the economic individualists of the 18th and the 19th centuries. And boy, was it taught. It was taught all over. All of the Ivy Leagues taught it. If you hadn't studied the Wealth of Nations, you hadn't gotten an education yet. Its influence in causing the French Revolution was indirect, but nonetheless profound. It furnished the final answer to the mercantilist argument and thereby strengthened the ambition of the bourgeoisie to have done with the political system which continued to block the path to economic freedom. And so we come to these various and sundry thresholds in our development, and I think we're at one now, as we're going into this first decade, closing out the first decade of the 21st century. I think we're at that threshold now where we need to have a new mind happening. And it needn't carry along all the baggage that we've got back there in the rumble seat. Just stop at the next filling station and empty out the trunk. And move forward into this 21st century with new tools and new anticipations and new goals and new desires. And get rid of some of this baggage that we've got as laws that absolutely block the path to economic freedom. These various and sundry laws created by these legal positivist despots that were swept in the roll-up between World War I and World War II, and even before that, setting their foundation at the turn of the 19th century into the 20th century. So much came out of the Industrial Revolution, it's almost impossible to list. But we're in this new revolution now. Surely we still need iron, we still need all of the copper, we still need all the brass, we need all that stuff too. But there are new tools coming on. And if we allow others to gain the upper hand, they'll just simply monopolize those tools and perhaps use them against we the people. And that we cannot allow. Folks, I'll be back again tomorrow. Hope you've enjoyed today's broadcast. Make most of it. Make the most out of your day. Till then, good day.
Taking it back, one precinct, one county, one state at a time. You've been listening to Become Vocal Local.
Now on DVD. My newest documentary film, The Secret Right, Volume 1. I'm Josh Reeves, and for the almost 2 years, I have researched the secretive right-wing group known as the Council for National Policy. This film explores for the first time the hidden hand that controls the religious and military aims of the American right wing, with such topics as Iran-Contra, the John Birch Society, eugenics, the Vatican controllers, Christian Zionists, the Bohemian Grove, the Patriot Movement, and more. More powerful than the Council on Foreign Relations, more secretive than the Bilderberg Group, The Secret Right Volume 1 goes where no other film has dared to go. Get your copy today at secretrightmovie.com. That's www.secretrightmovie.com. And find out what you haven't been told about the New World Order.
Loan modifications don't work, at least not without some leverage from a forensic audit by mortgage fraud examiners. Have your payments skyrocketed under an adjustable rate mortgage? Have you been laid off or had your hours cut? Are balloon payments coming due? Congress and the White House are pinning their hopes on homeowners renegotiating their mortgages to stop the housing crisis. Trouble is, the banks are saying no 80% of the time. That's where Mortgage Fraud Examiners comes in. They perform forensic loan audits and appraisals to find legal deficits in your mortgage. They estimate that up to 85% of all mortgages have legal problems. Banks and lenders suddenly start cooperating if faced with a lawsuit for violating lending laws or appraisal fraud. You could gain some powerful ammunition to use for Mortgage Fraud Examiners. Get more information at www.mortgagefraudexaminers.com or call 800-540-EXAM. That's 800-540-3926.
As America limps on its last legs, a pillar of truth has risen. You're listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.